Jenkins, Nick speaking.
Yeah, hi, Nick. This is Bill Payne in Albuquerque.
Yeah. Oh, how you doing, Will?
Okay, Bill. Okay.
Oh, Bill it is.
Yeah.
How's everything going?
Well, I guess all right. I'm kind of interested in what you guys have to offer on book publishing.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was wondering if you had some time to speak about your book.
Yes.
So what's your book about?
Well, software, okay, and what software and what is happening with, the state of software, and it's kind of the mess it's gotten into, in the sense of all these updates. And also,
right.
Also something more kind of important, I think. Let's back up to 1980. In 1980, I was looking for a job, and I took a temporary job as a consultant with the Boeing Commercial Airplane Company. And I am one of the three authors of the Boeing 767 Software Certification Policy.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And, well, then I had a job offer there at Boeing after I got done with this. I was working as a contractor with InterGlobal Technical Services. But Boeing made me an offer. But I also had an offer at Sandia Laboratories, National Laboratories.
Right.
And so I took the job at Sandia National Laboratories. And when I came down here, I had asked my supervisor at Boeing for a copy of the Boeing Hardware Engineers Software Standards. And this is a document that went out to all the contractors of the 767 that were doing software, and it said you're going to follow these guidelines. Okay, and, you know, they're reasonable about it, but it was very, very specific. And one of the things that was very important is they said that all software modules must be less than one page of code long. And the reason,
really?
And the reason they did this is if an issue were discovered in software, they could go back and say, well, this program was entered this, oh, there, something happened here.
And, right.
And so I got a copy of this from my Boeing supervisor, sent it to me at Sandia Labs. And I was then a project leader of the Missile Secure Cryptographic Unit. And this was implementing an algorithm for the National Security Agency. Well, at that time, I kind of, you know, we had to get the software done. And incidentally, Sandia just has had a terrible time with software, okay, in the past. You know, overdue, buggy, and all that.
Right.
And,
right.
And so what I did is took my knowledge. Oh, let me back up to 1980. Before 1980, back in the 70s, I was a professor of computer science at Washington State University. And I went on sabbatical in 1972, 1973 at the University of Illinois. And when I came back from sabbatical, I realized that computing was changing. The small computers were coming in. And I better, you know, maybe start getting into small computers if I wanted to, you know, continue on in the industry. And so I started consulting with a company called Developmental Systems Corporation in Bellevue, Washington. And one of the reasons I got the job is I wrote a book on machine assembly and systems programming. And so I did some documentation for them. And then later on, they needed to do some telecommunications. I was in the meeting, and they said, anybody know anything about telecommunications, and no hands went up, and I stuck my hand up. Okay. And so I started writing the software for telecommunications. But the one thing that was very valuable is, and why I got the job in Boeing, is I had the experience with small computers. And also what messes they could get into. In other words, you know, here the idea of the owner was, oh, we're going to get the programs working and we're going to test them at two or three places. And then after that, we're going to mass market them. Okay. They did that.
Right.
But what they found out is every new user used it in a different way, an entire new set of bugs occurred. Okay. And they had to fix them. Well, this went on, and then it went broke, of course. You know, they just couldn't do it. And at that time, too, they really didn't have that much of telecommunications, and so you couldn't do it that way. You had to take trips. Well, when I, now let's back up into Sandia, and this is about 1982. What happened is I wrote a book on implementing BASICs, how BASICs work. And this was with Reston Prentice Hall. Well, Sandia, at that time, the software people were, you know, pretty reasonable guys and things, but they were all using BASIC. And they were using mostly Hewlett-Packard 9800 computers, maybe some of the IBM 5100s. In my experience in the business world in Washington was the Wang 2200s. Well, I wrote this book, and then the book publishing community, you know, had to approve it. And after that, they said, hey, we want you to teach a course on this. Well, I taught one course session, and it went over really well. So I taught a second course section, and they were going to actually get me out in Nevada test site and offer a third one. But at that time, I got busy with this missile secure cryptographic unit. Well, when in that type of software, you want to be real sure that you have the software which is doing its thing and no other software in the microprocessor.
Right.
Well, at that time, when we first did it, Sandia National Laboratories was trying to build the Intel 8080 as a rad hard part. Well, it was actually an 8085. Well, they had the 8085, then they had to have the UART, they had to have all these other chips, and they couldn't do it. Okay? And so my department manager at the time says, hey, well, we got them, incidentally, with the 8085, we got all the cryptographic software up, working, okay, in kind of record time. And he was really impressed. This is a department manager. Then the department manager brought me in and said, hey, I want you to learn about the 8051. And so I learned about the 8051, and I see what it is. It's like it has all the peripherals, like the UART, you know, and all sorts of timers and things like that. And so they could do with the 8051 in one chip what they tried to do with mini chips with the 8085. And so the department manager assigned me the task of porting our software with it, which at that time was the 8085 fourth interest group fourth over to the 8051. Well, I got a contractor by the name of Jerry Boutel, who is the author of the Nautilus metacompiler, which was used with the 8085 software to effectively do the technical lead of the project. In other words, you know, he said it this way. You might ask Michelangelo when he's going to be done. You don't tell him how to paint. Okay.
So right.
I understand, Jerry. Okay. And so Jerry also kind of lined up the other people that would be helpful in getting the project together. Well, we got it all together, okay, and then ported the missile secure cryptographic unit over to the 8051. And at that time, we got invited back to NSA, and there was an NSA employee by the name of William Legato, and he said, "Why did you do it in Forth? We hate Forth," and all that. You know, I mean, this was, you know, okay, you know, things.
Right.
And so I got another job then to build the data authenticator for the USSR comprehensive test ban treaty, and this is to do the hardware and the software. And again, I chose the 8051, and I used the Forth because I knew I could get the job done, and I probably couldn't have gotten the job done. I know I couldn't have gotten the job done if I didn't use other technology. Well, what happens? We got it all together, okay, and got the unit out there, and I wrote a final report and that, and then that was over, and so Sandia then assigned me to break electronic locks for the FBI, okay? And at that time, one of the NSA sent an employee by the name of Donald Simard to Sandia to New Forth. And my department manager, who was Kent Parsons, and he was the one that initially did this project, said, "He's a spy, you know?" Yeah, okay. And so I did that. Well, then what happened? This is about 1990, and everything was going. At that time, I wrote a book on what we had done. Now, Sandia had spent literally millions of dollars on this software, and that is offering courses to employees, my salary, the salaries of other people, the people that helped out in the Forth, and also on this data authenticator for the USSR. Comprehensive test ban treaty. And we spent, you know, I'm guessing, you know, well, it was millions of dollars. But that was in 1990. And then what happened? The C++ people moved in. Okay. And the thing is, oh, if it's not done in C++, it is no good. Okay. And they were pretty obnoxious. Well, at that time, they started giving me more trouble with NSA, and I got fired from Sandia Laboratories. Well, I wasn't sure why. They tried to hang a security violation on with me with NSA, saying, "Oh, you violated the rules between NSA." Well, what happened? My first time doing this is, they had an agreement that you had to get everything signed by NSA, and I didn't sign the agreement. Okay. And here they had like a trial and everything like this, and they bullshit. I didn't do that. You show me where I signed, where I had agreed to have them give the approval. Well, then what happens after I got fired? I wasn't sure if it was the FBI that did this or NSA, and so the FBI investigated. And the FBI came back with actually the memorandum from NSA saying to Sandia, "Get rid of this guy." All right.
Wow.
Okay, then they got rid of me. Then what happened?
Wow, my note.
Okay, then now it gets, well, here, I'll go on with you. At that time, the C++ people were like, you know, hey, if it's not done in C++, it's no good. And if I wanted to work and get work while I'm unemployed waiting for a retirement, I decided I had better learn C and C++. And so I learned C, C++, and got Windows 9002 ISO certified in writing Windows device drivers. And so I did this until retirement in 2006. But then in about, if I can tell you about it, 1992, a Swiss national by the name of Hans Bühler was arrested in Tehran for espionage and tossed into the Evin prison in Tehran. And James Bamford, the author of the Puzzle Palace, and also and he was an ABC news director, and another employee, John Cooley, who's the agent, I guess, in Nicosia, Cyprus, learned about Hans Bueller. And so they got in contact, and when Hans Bueller got out of prison, he phones me, and he said, "Hey, do you know why I got tossed into prison?" And he told me what happened. I said, "Yeah, I can tell you." And what happened, Sandia National Laboratories and NSA, since I was working with them for a number of years here, I got to know all the, a lot of the people at NSA. And one of the guys from NSA told me, "Hey, Bill, who is America's greatest traitor?" I said, "Tell me." "Ronald Reagan." I said, "Okay, why?" He said he got on TV after the LaBelle disco bombing, and he said, "We have absolute proof that Libya instigated it." And he said, "We have absolute proof." So we were reading their communications. Okay, and wow. This is what I learned. And I knew the guys. This one guy, Simard, was in it, and then a guy by the name of James Gosler, who got me fired, incidentally, because he worked with the NSA. And they gave talks, and I was listening to talks, and I heard what they were saying, but I didn't know. But what it was called the covert channel. And so if they have a cryptographic device, what they do is have this covert channel. And so if, say, the Iranians entered the key and then start sending ciphered material, it sends the key out with the cipher text, but on this covert channel. And what they did is the U.S. implanted it in Crypto AG's machines that they sold to Iran. Well, Hans Bueller, when he gets out, okay, he does that. He sends me a tape, okay, from Swiss Radio International about this, but he also sends about 20-some pages of documents that he had collected. Well, I posted some of these things, and then later I get an email from the Iran Donetsk Jew, which is like a student movement, and an A. Zubin. And he said, "We saw some of these documents. We want you to tell us what happened." Okay, I'll do that. All right.
And then, right, yeah.
Okay, and I did. And then I started getting other inquiries. One of the more interesting ones was this guy from Moscow gets on. He gets real buddy-buddy, okay? And he sends pictures from his flat in Moscow. And then he kept on going. And then finally he said, "Tell us what happened to the Iranians."
Wow.
Okay, and I did. And after that, never heard from him again. His name was Alexander Semyonov, but also he goes under the name of Kirsov, K-I-R-S-O-V. All right, but here now I wrote this book, okay, since there's so much money invested in it, I wrote this book in Better Controller 4th. Well, here I'm trying to get publishers in the U.S., and man, I got rejection. I got 5 or 6, and finally I submitted it to Academic Press, and here I got an offer. Okay. And, and I got a nice advance and all that thing, and so I wrote the book. And then it went out there, And here's the wild part. Most of these books that go out, my first book sold lots, and we built a house in Pullman, financed largely by it. Okay, but even the basic book did all right. And the basic book was actually some guys got together and took the book apart and posted it in PDF after, you know, quite a number of years. And so they weren't going to get into trouble. But then what happened is, after the publication of this book, at the last count, I've made over $18,000 on royalties.
Wow.
Okay, which is pretty unheard of. And it's now being distributed by all sorts of publishers. So you go out there on the web, you can find out what's happened. Well, now we're back into retirement time. Social Security, I got my Sandia retirement, okay, even though I was there long enough to get vested, they say that, then I got my Washington State University retirement, so, you know, hey, we're doing all right. But then,
absolutely.
Then what occurred on Windows is, since I was writing device drivers, I knew what happened, but if I were going to say I want to make money doing 8051 work, I would go bankrupt, okay? The jobs were out there, but I was making over $100,000 a year when I retired writing Windows device drivers, but I hated it.
Right,
okay?
Wow.
I hate
right.
I sooner do the embedded control work. Well, then along comes along, okay, at that time, Windows XP comes along, and the software for my book worked, which surprised me, because it was way done back in the DOS ages, back in 1982, even before, you know, Windows. And then what happened, Windows 7 came along, hey, the software no longer works. Windows 8 comes, it's even worse. Nothing works. Not even Windows 8 works very well. Then Windows 10 comes along. And 10 was kind of all right, okay. And I bought a Windows 10 machine for $209, an HP Stream 13 from Amazon for $209 to learn Windows and Bluetooth. Well, in that time that Windows came out with the first edition was 1511. Well, I tried to update it, and it wouldn't update. I talked to Hewlett Packard, the Indian, said, no, there's a hardware mistake. Well, about a year or two ago, I let a guy I knew that worked at a computer store on his day off, I said, hey, check this thing over and kind of clean up the software on this old Windows. And he did, and he came, hey, he said, hey, Bill, I got Windows 10. 1909 working on it. What? Okay. And I gave him a $20 tip. Well, after that, DOSBox in England got on it, where you could run DOS. Well, when I got on and ran DOSBox, hey, my software's all working again. All right. And it's continued to work. And then came along VirtualBox from Oracle. And it runs XP and lots of other operating systems. Well, does it run the software for my books? Yeah. Not only that, it runs it an order of magnitude faster. But, of course, you have to get Windows XP, and that's about 50 million lines of code, okay, on top of it. But what now, okay, here, what I'm kind of interested in is I started reading about what they were doing in Boeing aircraft, and they were upgrading it. And when we did the work there, it had like a serial interface between the software called AirInc 429. Well, then, just not too long ago, Lauda Flight something, Lauda Airlines, had a 767 crash out of Indonesia. And what happened is the reverse thruster activated, okay, in flight. And it went down And it went down and then disintegrated about 5,000 feet. And this is a 767. Well, the Indonesia investigated and they said, yeah, we know what happened. The thruster deployed. Why? We don't have the foggiest, okay? And my guess was, software. Then it comes along to fairly recently here with Atlas Air had a 767 flying out of Miami to Houston. What happened? It came along and it was flying and it went, came down to 6,000 feet over the Texas coast. Well, at that time, it went just slightly up, and then it went into a dive. And 16 seconds later, it went smash into Trinity Bay. Well, I got curious, okay, and I issued a FOIA to them, okay, about this, and man, did I ever get gas from it. They still haven't done it. Well, I also FOIA'd the FAA because what I read is they had installed a Linux on 767s, and those, they have two of them that crashed. Well, my hunch, well, not a hunch, but a hypothesis is what happened if there was malware on it. The malware, they're flying along at 6,000 feet. The malware was collecting data, airspeed data, and elevation data, and it sent it to the autopilot and said, hey, we're at 20,000 feet, and we're going into a dive, and the autopilot says, ah, I'm going to fix this. Okay. And, you know, it starts diving down, and then the 767 at that time kind of, it was diving down to something like a 49 degree angle. Then it pulled up at about 22 degrees and then smashed into the Trinity Bay, killing three people. Well, you know, hey, you know, malware? But then on the 737, what my interest is, nobody could be stupid enough to put C and C++ in an aircraft. You know, that software, you know, large modules and so forth. You know, from right. My experience, I mean, you know, they'd be out of their gourd to do this. And man, they've just, you know, they've also gone, they even lied about the FOIA. And I'm about ready to sue them, okay? And I have some experience on doing a FOIA lawsuit. It'll cost me $400, but, you know, that may be $400.
That's okay.
Well spent. All right. Particularly for a book. What may have happened, they said, oh, it was a faulty sensor. Well, the same thing may have happened there, is that what happened is they're reporting this speed information and also altitude information to the autopilot, and the autopilot says, oh, I'm going to fix things up. Yeah, right. Okay. But with the misinformation, you know, it smashed them into the ground. Well, I don't like see the guys that really ticked me off, particularly at Sandia. Even when I was getting, before I got fired, my department manager says, you're going to have to leave Sandia. And I didn't ask him why, but my guess is because of my expertise, both in basics and forth, in these small system and not going along with the C and C++ stuff, they didn't like that.
Right.
They'll get rid of people, you know? If you don't like what they're doing, you go.
Yeah. Absolutely. And have you finished writing this book?
No. I have it all in notes form here. But
I'm interested. I appreciate you sharing all that.
Okay,
with me.
Well, you know, I got this email yesterday. I guess it was from Emma, and you know, said, okay, yeah, I'll respond back.
Yeah.
Okay, but I'll just give you
when
that.
When do you think you'll be finished writing it?
Well. Better yet, that isn't a right thing. Putting it together, okay, I think it's already been written. It's just putting the parts together, okay, and doing it in such a way that it's of current interest because of all these messes with software. You know, like
right,
Windows is upgrade, upgrade, upgrade. Well, in the business world, what's happening there is a lot of the businesses when XP came along, they said, okay, we're going to get out of Windows 98 and things like this and do it. And then all of a sudden, oh, it's no good. You have to now upgrade to Windows 7. Well, this is big dollars for them. And right, so many of them have not. As a matter of fact, I think the U.S. power grid still uses XP. All right, they can't afford to do this. Now what they're doing is saying, oh, you have to, you know, go up to Windows 11. Well, there's all these upgrades. It's buggy, okay? And it's costing these guys a fortune. Another thing is happening at Microsoft is that the people that are good, and there's excellent people, like the people who wrote Windows 1909. I mean, that's outrageous that this 1909 would work on a HP stream, and it's only a 2 gigabyte, 2 gigabyte RAM, 32E MMC memory in the thing and work on it. It's just, you know, it just grossed me out.
Right, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And so, but what I think is going to happen is these companies that are doing it's costing them more and more money. They have more and more problems, issues with their stuff not working, you know. And they do the upgrades and they break things that used to work. Well, this is, you know, it's almost like bankruptcy time for many corporations just trying to keep up with the software. And I don't know how you solve it. I mean, I just don't know. But what I'm saying is now, the people that did this and are good, they're retiring from Microsoft.
Right.
Okay, and now they're getting these other guys in that don't know very much about it, and they're trying to, and the manager says, look, we got this problem, you got to fix it. And here the poor guy tries to fix it. They have these big modules, they can't get it like for the airplanes did it, where they can say, oh, here's a module that's 60 lines long, tell me what's wrong. Oh, yeah, we got this, we can fix it, you know.
Right,
they're not doing
right.
It. They have these huge modules, and they try to fix them, and they screw something else up. And this is going on and on. We can even go further than this. Is that Google, which is, you know, the Android operating system, that's also written in C and C++, and a batch assembler. Then, of course, all the Linuxes, and there's 500 distros now or something out there.
Right.
And they are, and so it's just a big software mess. But
I was going to ask you, when do you think you'll be able to put all that together?
Well, I don't know. I within the next couple of, I would say, even weeks, I want to tell the FAA, I don't want to sue both NS and TSB and FAA at the same time. And so if I put the lawsuit together, I will do is just sue the FAA, but also name is a defendant is the NTSB, and say this is roughly the same issue here. They're not telling us the module size. They aren't letting us know, you know, what's happening. They have these big modules, so they can't figure out why the plane went down.
Right, absolutely.
Okay,
so you're going to do that first.
Yeah, I can do that. And the reason I say I've had experience, another guy and I, Arthur Morales, we were so ticked off, or I was ticked off at NSA, we actually sued them for the documents they gave Iran during the Iran-Iraq War. Okay, and that was that was a number of years ago. That was, you know, like in the 95, 97, something like that era.
I'm just trying to figure out when I should follow up with you next, because the next step from here is us taking a look at the book. So I just want to follow up with you when you think you're going to be closer to having that all into that order.
I'd say sometime this summer.
Okay, great. So I will make a note of that.
Okay, I just wanted to give you this background, okay, about what it is. Because
absolutely.
It's these jackasses, the CCP++ people, took over. But here, the thing is, the reason Oracle, there's two basic technologies in software. One, the real machine, like DOS and all this thing. The second technology is virtual machines. And that is fourth. It started. Well, Sun Microsystems, when they built Solaris is built on a virtual machine. Also, the Java language is also built on a virtual machine. And as the virtual machine executes, which is really the fourth machine, and Java is built upon that. And one thing that is came out in, hot, but if virtual machines are much more reliable, they don't crash in comparison to real machines. And it was just something that has been discovered, okay? I wouldn't say there's no good reason for it, but it's just a fact that is true. And so there are these virtual machines, and people are coming out with more and more virtual machines. And I think Python, by the way, may be a virtual machine. And so there's two different technologies here, and NSA, the CCP++, they just hate fourthians.
Right.
And I actually interviewed.
I appreciate you sharing all that with me.
Okay.
I think it'll be a good book, and it'll be exciting. You have a lot of detail in there.
Yeah.
I do have to run into a meeting though, so I hate to call this.
No. Okay, fine. Okay, I was waiting for your response, but I just decided to phone. I was trying to get Linux Arch working unsuccessfully on our laptop, and right after I decided to quit. Okay, and I got all phone. I phone you instead.
Oh, no problem.
Okay.
It's no problem at all.
Let's just keep in touch, okay? And we'll let you know what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Follow up with me in a couple months, and that way we can keep in touch and see where you're at with your book.
Well, nice talking to you.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely, Bill. And then any questions, you give me a call back.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
All righty.